thank you so much for being there.
What the mainstream media isn't saying.
Your show is always relevant.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
I'm really glad you have this on your show today.
You know, that's, well, what I'm about to share with you is exactly what that that bumper just said. We're going to be able to look at life. You're not going to get anywhere else. What the mainstream media is not telling you, I will. And I'm glad to have you here with me today. Thank you so much for joining me. I want to tell you a couple stories here that aren't getting a whole lot of reporting, but I do think they need some attention. And look, we're what, a couple weeks away now? We're getting near the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. And let's remember that this case has not only impacted life in the womb, right, when it began, but we're seeing a culture of death, a term that was coined by John Paul II. And we're now seeing this is not a life issue just about the unborn, right, the child in the womb. There's a battle at the other end of life. And one of the consequences of thinking that it's okay to end life, you know, when someone becomes pregnant, it leads to this thinking that you could end life really at any time. So there's another consequence. You know, people looking at, you know, at others simply as a way to help other people live. The headline, there was a headline I saw from the Ottawa Citizen, and it's an example of our northern neighbors. And listen to this headline. I'll share it with you and we'll talk about it. Medically assisted deaths prove a growing boon to organ donations in Ontario. So how's that sound to you? Now we go from euthanasia now to medically assisted deaths. You just see the slippery slope. You see how things are constantly evolving. You know, and it's proving to be a boon for organ donation. Here's the first paragraph of the story. I'll just share the first sentence or two. Ontarians who opt for medically assisted deaths are increasingly saving or improving other people's lives by also including organs and tissue donation as part of their final wishes. That sounds so compassionate, doesn't it? Such a good thing to do, even heroic, right? Look, that's part of the insidious evil that is pushing this ideology into our society. It's utilitarian, and people are blindly going along with it. Joining me today, and we can talk about it. Feel free to dial in, too, if you want to sound off. It's 888-914-9149. I'm joined by Wesley Smith. He is a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute. He's an attorney, a consultant, and he's the author of about 14 different books. His latest one is Culture of Death, The Age of Do-Harm Medicine. And you can follow him on his Twitter handle as well. It's @ForcedExit. Pretty easy to remember. And I follow him. I think you'll appreciate what he has to, you know, send along. Wesley, thank you for joining us today. Good afternoon.
Thanks, and Happy New Year. How's this an example of do-harm medicine?
I know. It's a slippery slope, isn't it? I mean, I don't know where it stops. You see this evolution from taking a child in the womb to attacking life, you know, in the final years of it or chapters of it, and now we're harvesting organs. It actually sounds like what's happening in China, but fill me in on your take.
Sure, yeah. You know, my first anti-euthanasia piece, and for listeners who might not know, I've been fighting assisted suicide and euthanasia since 1993, mm-hmm. I've traveled the world, spoken, written books, and so forth. And in my first piece, which was published in Newsweek in 1993, I predicted that if we went down this assisted suicide road, euthanasia road, we would end up with organ harvesting conjoined, yeah. And I called it as a plum to society. And back in 93, people started yelling at me, you're a fearmonger, you're an alarmist, it'll never happen. Well, and now when it happens, people say, well, of course we should get some good out of these deaths.
Right.
Because that's how the slippery slope works. And by the way, this is not a slippery slope argument. It's a facts on the ground argument. So what has happened in Canada,
yeah,
is that a Supreme Court ruling back in 2015 basically created a positive right to be euthanized throughout the country. And it has become legalized throughout the country. And as I said, I've been doing this for 26 years, and I have never been as shocked as I have been by the enthusiasm with which Canadian society has embraced the culture of death in terms of euthanasia. In Ontario, for example, doctors are now told by a court of appeals and by the Medical Society of Ontario, right, that if they are approached by somebody legally qualified for euthanasia, and they have a religious objection, let's say they're Catholic and they think committing homicide would be a cardinal sin, right? They have to do it anyway, or engage in what is called an effective referral, meaning they have to find the doctor they know will kill the patient, which makes that doctor who objects complicit in homicide. And so that's how incredibly powerful this culture of death has become. Yeah. Also in Ontario, which is the Canada's most populous province, and throughout the country, but in Ontario, not only are they conjoining euthanasia with organ harvesting, but when the organ donation organization, the nonprofit that deals with that issue in Ontario, it's called Trillium, T-R-I-L-L-I-U-M. Yep. When they find out, they are told ahead of time that somebody has asked for what they call euphemistically medical aid in dying, euthanasia, lethal injection. And they will contact people who are suicidal to the point they're asking to be killed and say, can we have your organs? It's an astonishing evil, as you pointed out, because it's basically saying, rather than give you suicide prevention, which suicidal people in this circumstance are not offered in Canada, we'll say your deaths have greater value than your lives. Can we have your liver? Can we have your heart? It is grossly cruel, because it could be, and stories like the one you read from, which are boosting this in the media, it could be the tipping point that takes somebody who's, let's say, profoundly disabled, or maybe you don't have to be imminently dying in Canada by any stretch, you know, may live for a year, 2 years, 3 years, maybe the tipping point that says, you know, I don't like my life anymore. I can't take it anymore. Somebody else can get a great benefit. It'll be a plum to society if I am killed and my organs harvested. That is happening in Canada. And what makes it so urgent is that the same thing happens in Netherlands and Belgium with mentally ill people, by the way. And when I used to and still do point out that look at what this has led to in Belgium and in the Netherlands, the pro-euthanasia types will say, oh, well, those countries, they're nothing like the United States. Yeah. Well, Canada's our closest cultural cousin. And if it can happen in Canada, it can happen here. And we have to not give any more ground.
Yeah, and I don't want to be too extreme here, but I do want your take. I mean, I remember reading about what happened in China with the Falun Gong prisoners who were euthanized for their organs and were harvested. And it makes me think of this movie. I don't know if you ever saw Logan's Run. It's a kind of dystopian type of movie. The film tells the story of a hedonistic society that, you know, allows people only to live to their 30 and then they're killed. And I just wonder, will there come a time where insurance says, you know what, you're getting too old and we can't do this? Or will there be cultures where they'll say, okay, at this age, that's it? I mean, that seems so extreme and almost impossible, but how far can this thing actually go?
Well, I don't anticipate, well, first, obviously, that this is not the Falun Gong. The Falun Gong are political prisoners, and the Uyghurs also now in China that are put in a prison for political reasons. They are tissue typed, and their organs are sold, and they're murdered for their organs. That's not happening in China. I mean, in Canada, obviously.
Right.
I don't believe that that we will get to the place where euthanasia is mandatory. But I do believe we could very easily get to the place where it becomes normalized and expected, and that people who choose, let's say, to engage in a long, drawn-out period of care actually may be looked down upon as selfish and this kind of thing. So I don't think there would be a non-voluntary euthanasia. There would be, I mean, involuntary euthanasia, meaning I don't want it and you get it anyway, although that has happened occasionally in Netherlands. But I do think there would be that expectation, and there would be non-voluntary euthanasia. That is, people who may not have asked, and if it becomes deemed a normal, regular, quote, treatment, close quote, why can't a relative decide on behalf of an incompetent patient? Or why can't a doctor say, listen, this is the what I recommend for your mother because she's never going to get better. It's a very, very dangerous situation beyond the idea of dragging people into killing centers and killing them.
Let me grab a few calls for if you want to join us. My guest today, Wesley Smith, our number 888-914-9149. If you call now, you can get in. That's 888-914-9149. I'll go to Jane, who's standing by and listening to us in Illinois. Hi, Jane, you're on the air with Wesley Smith.
Yes, hi. I have actually, the Rush Hospital in Chicago euthanized my son in at the end of November of 2018. And I'm pretty sure it was because he was on Medicare and his care would have been expensive for years. And they didn't ask me. A Good Samaritan Hospital did ask, kind of suggested that, and I said, God gave him life, and only God can take it away. And I will take him as I get him, and your job is to heal him medically as best as you can. Yeah. But when we transferred him to Rush because of some complications, it took him 3 days to euthanize him. They withheld his food, his liquids. And I think they gave him something, and I'm actually wanting to sue them.
Well, Jane, we're sorry for your loss. I mean, I can't imagine losing a child. But, Wesley, let's talk about that. Depriving hydration and food. And, again, I don't have all the medical details of her story there, but what are your thoughts on something like that? Does it happen in our own country?
Well, there's something in our country which is called futile care or inappropriate care. It's a bioethics approach, bioethics phenomenon, bioethics philosophy, that says that if a doctor believes that the quality of a patient's life, and it's usually like in a life support circumstance, is inadequate for the patient, or the doctor believes the patient is suffering, that even if the family or the patient asks for the care, the doctor can unilaterally withhold it. Now, I don't know what the law is in Illinois, because laws are different in every state. In Texas, if a doctor decides, in fact, there's a case right now happening in Texas. If people go to National Review and look up my latest article, one of my latest articles, they'll see this futile care case in Texas in which a baby is trying to be forced off life support. Because in Texas, there's a law that permits the doctor who wants to stop care over the patient's desires or the family's desires to go to a bioethics committee at the hospital. And if the bioethics committee, which remember are strangers to the patient, says, yes, the treatment should stop, then the patient has 10 days to find another hospital, which is difficult because these tend to be very expensive patients to care for. Having it done unilaterally in the way that the caller described, I don't believe is the norm. I would, I have heard cases like this before. As you can imagine, I hear from people all the time. It's, all I can suggest is if that has happened, someone should contact a lawyer. Somebody should, complain to the Department of Health and so forth. But it's very difficult because a lot of times the people who are abandoned in this way are people with very difficult circumstances, and people don't want, the powers that be don't want to do anything.
Let's do this. Let's move along. Grab another quick call. Jane, thank you very much for your call. I'm sorry again for your loss. And as Wesley said, maybe consider getting some legal counsel to look into it. Joanne's listening to us in Maine. Joanne, thank you for joining the conversation.
Hi, Drew. I'm late getting in, but I just wanted to bring up the fact that we fought a physician-assisted suicide bill here and lost last June here in Maine, and it was supported by the Medical Society here. A number of nurses testified. In fact, patients testified that their extended chemotherapy was denied by the insurance, but the insurance company would provide them with help for physician-assisted suicide. So that's happening now. Secondly, I will send you a link for Kevin Dunn Media in Canada. It sounds like your guest has is well aware of it. He's covered the same countries, the same topics. Yeah. His DVD is vulnerable, plus he has another legal, another one that the title escapes me, but I'll send it to you. So it's sad. As a bedside ICU nurse, I've seen it firsthand. I was told to give the patient morphine, and unbeknownst to me, I said no. And handed it back to the physician. So it's happening.
Joanne, thank you.
May I say, good for you. Good for you for doing that. And yes, you're beginning to see insurance companies, and certainly it's happened in Canada, where they refuse wanted treatment, but will say, we'll give you euthanasia. There was a case in Canada of a patient with Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. He wanted to stay at home so he could be with his son. The Canadian single-payer health system said, we're not going to pay for 24-hour care. You're going to have to go into a facility. And he said, well, in that case, I want to be euthanized. And he was. There's another case of a man who was put in the hospital. He had been depressed. And the doctor, he apparently asked to be killed, and the doctor said they were going to do it. They told the family. The family begged them not to do it, and they had no power to stop the homicide. So once you decide that killing is an acceptable answer to human suffering, the problems go increasingly dire, and the killing license expands. And the problem is we have a media completely in the tank for the killing agenda, and they don't. They're very uncurious about this. They don't really report it in depth, but they do glamorize assisted suicide. In fact, there have been many stories written about assisted suicide parties where people hold a party and then kill themselves at the end of it and attack, and it's depicted as being in charge of your own death and glamorized. It's very insidious.
My guest today, Wesley Smith. Wesley, let me take a short pause here. When we come back, we'll grab a few more stories. Plus, I will tell you about a young 11-month-old girl. Her name is Tinsley Lewis. Her case is in Texas. Wait to hear what's happening to this little baby. That and more straight ahead.